And we're back. Welcome to Deep Thinking, the motorcycle road racing podcast.
Keep your feet off the table, Michael.
We don't have a table, dude. Hey, did I tell you I laid hardwood floors at home?
You did.
Yes, and now I've got splinters in my groin. Thank you. I'll be here all week. Tip your waitress. Enjoy the meal. He's Ed Sorbo from Lindemann Engineering.
He's Michael Gunderson. It was just a veneer.
You can find Ed on the web at le-suspension.com. And you can find my photographs. I'm going to go shoot some more photos at motorbikeroadracing.smugmug.com.
Number 39.
Number 39, right. We got a race coming up at Wira here in a couple of weeks.
August 30th. Auto Club Speedway.
I just sent Sean and Evelyn an email. Said, hey, it's from Gugis, and once again, I'm trying to tell you how to run your business.
There you
because,
go.
Because, well, I think
they have a file for those.
Exactly. Right? It's called spam. Yeah. Well, I just, you know, call me crazy. Maybe the vintage bikes shouldn't run as a separate wave of the Formula One race. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But, you know, we'll see how it works.
Depends on the bikes and the class and the
rider.
And all the other things that are going.
Let's go with the scare.
That's the tricky part about it.
Hello, scared old man over here.
Well, we were just at Miller.
Right.
And it was a four-lap race.
Right.
So nobody's lapping anybody.
Right.
So it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Yeah. So, yeah, there's always a million things going on. But I think you hit the nail on the head, scared old man.
Yeah, no doubt.
Hey, and I got an email this morning.
Wait, hold on. It's not going to be so bad at a place like Fontana, but you go to some place like Vegas where we race with Wira, and the lap time is no longer, you know, the lap is no longer two at some miles. It's way, way shorter. Lap time is way shorter. Six laps, you know, good chance you run into slower traffic.
Go faster.
I'm trying.
Okay.
Sort of.
Try harder.
Have you washed
your bike yet?
I don't know how much I want to try harder.
That would be
I got to tell you about riding out to the Nevada test site.
I got
to
tell you about the
email
I got.
Yeah, we got an email. Go ahead.
An email from a guy today, and the email address is Brother Hickory.
Brother Hickory.
So I'm sorting through my emails, and I'm getting rid of the junk, and I'm, you know, and then I'm, hey, Brother Hickory. So I click on that right away. Psych. Just a guy who had a question about his BMW shock.
Oh. You know what, dude?
Hey, you know what? Hickory's not interested in you anymore because you dumped them for Aprilias.
Aprilia. By the way,
you like to criticize them for their MotoGP effort, but you want their bike.
Effort. I want their street bike. Hell yeah, I want their street bike. You know, no, look, it doesn't look like they're, you know what? I don't know how much effort they're putting in.
See, whenever
they
start stuttering, you know I won the argument.
No, there is no argument. I was going to
really?
Say,
it feels like one.
I'm not sure how much effort they're putting into their MotoGP program, okay? It's a learning year. We'll give them all that. Here's who I want to criticize.
They got a new bike at Bruno.
Well, they got a new frame, okay? First, I want to criticize Brother Hickory. I say you send his send his shock back filled with marinara sauce and laughing gas, okay? That's what I would. That's just me.
Use laughing gas to charge the shock because it doesn't make any difference.
Okay.
It's just the pressure of the gas that matters. And the reason we use nitrogen is simply that there's no moisture in nitrogen.
Okay.
It's the pressure that's doing the work.
What about the marinara sauce?
So nitrous oxide, laughing gas, would work just fine. Marinara sauce, we'd have to test the viscosity. But it's going to be... not synthetic. What's the
organic?
Organic based, and it's going to break down. So I'm going to have to call a nix on that.
No, we're going to have to. You have to use the stuff with the little garlic particles.
Yeah. No. you want to fix your leaky radiator in your car?
Oh,
eggs
yeah.
And pepper.
Right.
No problem.
Right,
but not in my motorcycles.
Hey. So here's who I want to criticize. I want to criticize Ducati. Okay. You know why? Because much like Aprilia, they have yet to send us a motorcycle. Secondly,
if that's the standard, there's a lot of companies
who
are in trouble.
Really, really just step up their game. No, okay, so Ducati gets all these concessions for MotoGP, right?
Okay.
You can have extra engines, you can do this, you can do that.
Special tires.
And so far, what are they doing? Spank. Nothing.
Okay.
You know, I mean, they look halfway good after day one at Brno.
I just watched Brno 2012. Brno 2012.
Yeah, yeah.
And Rossi's Ducati smoked like crazy for a while.
Smoked.
And then
what do you
smoke,
mean?
Smoke coming out the pipe.
Okay.
Big, crazy amount of puffs of smoke.
Right.
So they had concessions, they have tires, they have yada yada, and they even had Rossi and they still couldn't do it.
And here's the thing, I can give you a break in the rules, but you have to take advantage of it. you have to, if I give you unlimited testing and say, here's your opportunity
to catch up.
So Michael's
making the welfare argument that by giving you a break, then you're just taking a half-step effort.
No.
And you're going to become dependent on it.
No, not at all. Okay. What I'm saying is that if the idea was to give underperforming teams concessions in the rules to help them catch up,
right.
It's incumbent upon them.
The team is supposed to do its part.
Exactly. You know, and that's why we've seen those riders so dispirited. We've seen the team.
Well, they look a little happier today.
Today, a little bit happier today.
Track is more suited to
them.
I want to ride that track.
I do too.
Do they have track days there?
Yes.
Do they have track days like we have track days?
Yeah.
Or is it more like somehow, right? Remember now, when we go to the races in America,
right.
We're like, yeah, I got my easy up, yada, yada, right?
Right.
If you go to a track in Europe, you don't need an easy up.
Right?
Right?
Exactly.
So I don't know what other things they do better than us on a track day.
But boy, I'm glad I'm not the only one. I look at that track.
Well, there's a whole lot. Basically, if you said to me, would you like to go to this MotoGP calendar racetrack?
Okay,
I'd be like,
the answer is yes.
Okay.
Exactly. I'll go. Right?
Except maybe Laguna. Laguna sucks.
Yeah, well, I had the Dragon Easy up last time I went to Laguna, right? They're in Portimão, for the track in Portugal. There's a couple of crazy fast blind right at the apex, right at the top of the crest of the hill turns. Then there's a downhill that just makes the corkscrew look like a mild downgrade. It's just like, and then there's like 1, 2, 3.
But this isn't a MotoGP track.
It's a World Superbike track.
Yeah, see, that's not MotoGP. You are so easy to distract.
I am so
easy. You were criticizing Ducati.
I am so easy to please.
That?
I'm a hoe.
So you want Ducati to step it up. I think they're trying as hard as they can.
I don't think they are. I think this is the same pattern that they fell into all those years ago.
I think the thing that Ducati needs to fix is not a mechanical thing or an engineering thing. It's a cultural thing.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can fix that. If you have however many people working in your company, you can't fire all of them to get a new culture, right?
No, but what you can do is just tell them, you adopt a different mindset. Look, building a new bike every 5 years and then hoping it's good for 5 years isn't going to work. Every time you show up at the track,
you've
got to have new stuff.
So they make their money selling motorcycles, not racing MotoGP.
Right.
They're making money, right?
Yeah, right.
They're selling all the bikes they can.
Exactly, right? Exactly. Okay.
And we've talked about this before. What is the goal of Company X in their racing?
And it's to sell motorcycles.
If you're going to assume that everybody wants to do what Honda and Yamaha want to do, which is be the dominant force everywhere.
Right.
Well, guess what? If you're coming into this program and there's a dominant force and there's two of them.
Right.
Maybe making a goal of let's go beat those guys. Maybe that's crazy.
I'll grant it.
Right?
Okay,
we've argued that, Ducati doesn't have to win the championship to succeed.
But they're just, but I don't know how well.
Let me make it more clear to you.
I don't know that slow descent, though.
Let's line you, me, and Usain Bolt up in a sprint race.
Okay.
On feet, running.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
I'm pretty happy with second because I kicked your ass.
Neither one of us is thinking about beating Usain. And you know why you're going to get second? Because when they shoot the gun off, I'm going to go get something from the bar. I'm going to score an intellectual victory, Ed.
I saw a really cool graphic.
Brother Hickory.
It's
upsetting.
They did a graphic of humans running in the Olympics 100 meters over time.
Right.
And they showed it in such a way that when Usain Bolt, the fast guy at the time, is at the finish line,
right?
Where would all these other guys be? And you go back through time and you see this pretty gradual angled line as we got slower going backwards. And those guys are all faster than us, of course.
Right.
Of course, some of it's, the surface that they run on is better, the shoes are better, the equipment is better. Most of it is the training is better, the process by which they learn to
do
that.
The human body is better.
It's really impressive to see that evolution over time.
And that's what I'm saying Ducati needs to do. They need to Usain Bolt their race program.
But Honda and Yamaha are the Usain Bolt.
Yes, but they'll be closer if they bolt it up.
Well, this is the argument I made back in the beginning. I said shame on everybody for accepting the rules package.
I agree.
My argument is show up, race with the big boys, get spanked by the big boys. Second, third, fourth place, whatever, against those guys is not a bad thing.
No, figure out what
they're
doing.
Except then we have both agreed that, this is pretty much what they got to do, right? And we talked about the people in the board making the money decisions, yada, yada, yada. What are you going to do?
Which is why we're going to talk about electronics in the next podcast. What else do we have to go over?
We can talk about electronics for a good long time.
Right, right.
I got this really cool book in the mail. So my good friend Bill Wickersham.
Wait, is this book? Did this book come in a brown paper wrapper?
No. Okay. So Bill Wickersham is moving, and he has all these really cool airplane books because he's a pilot.
Right.
Flies C-17s in the reserve, Air Force Reserve, full time. And so he said, "Hey, you want a couple of these books, right? Because it's a hassle moving that shit, right?" And he's read them all 100 times himself. So he sent me the books. And so one of them is, you know, all about the most famous planes of World War II. And it follows the plane from, you know, the idea in the guy's head and all the way, you know, and there was this version and that version and the little thingy was, it's like crazy detail, right?
Right.
The thing that I found was really interesting in this part about the Lancaster bomber, which is the big heavy bomber that the British developed for bombing Germany into submission.
Right.
So our similar plane would be the B-17 or the B-24, and the Lancaster carried more bombs than the B-17 did.
Right.
Anyway, they had these various electronics devices. Radar was new.
Right.
And all these other devices for doing electronic stuff were new. And in the process of flying to Germany and dropping the bombs and trying to get back, at the time, out of 100 guys, 24 would survive unscratched after they completed their 50 missions or whatever it is.
Okay.
Everybody else dead or captured, okay? Or horribly wounded permanently. So it was really bad odds. And they had a identification friend or foe device, an early one, that sends out a signal that tells the good guys, "Hey, I'm one of you, don't shoot me."
Right.
Okay? And somehow or the other, they got it in their head that this thing was protecting them if they turned it on all the time. It would confuse the radar that the Germans were using to aim their anti-aircraft guns. Okay? And it wasn't. It was sending out, it was basically turning on a flashlight from far away, right?
Right.
I can see you using your flashlight far, far from where you can get enough light on me. And so the Germans developed electronic things that noticed those signals and then homed in on them and shot them down, okay? Why did the guys think that they that this would do? The first person, he was just confused. He turned the switch on, he didn't get shot down, and he goes,
tomorrow we're chucking more versions in the volcano.
Correlation does not equal causation.
Right.
But then the other interesting part about this, so now they're all turning them on, right?
Okay.
For all the people that it didn't work for,
right,
they have no data. Those guys all died.
Right.
Only the people that made it back, falsely believing that this thing helped them, were reporting how well it worked.
You know,
and so I think about this kind of stuff a lot because of all the confused people I talk to about suspension and motorcycle setup and gearing and all aspects of what we do, not just the race, not just the suspension. And I'm always looking for examples and to try to understand how this shit goes wrong in people's heads.
Oh, yeah.
And so it starts out with one wrong idea, and from there it just goes bonkers.
Dude, after my last crash, the doctor is telling me, I'm in the hospital. The doctor's like, "Yeah, road racing is very dangerous." He says, "I treat a lot of people who are injured." Well, of course, you're a fucking doctor.
You treat a lot
right?
of injured people.
Exactly. You know? What the hell? Guess what, dude? The guys who crash and they're not injured, they're not coming to see you going, "Hey, look at me. Look at, check out my tan. And besides, I never catch colds." What the fuck did you expect?
No, that's a good point, right? You have to be aware of not just collecting data. You got to be aware of your data sample, where you got it from, what its limitations are. If you don't think about that kind of stuff,
right,
you can make a decision that's totally correct on everything you got.
Right.
But it's completely useless.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I thought that was a neat... Oh, the other really cool thing about getting this book in the mail, I opened the book up, and there is a program from a 3-hour endurance challenge at Hawaii Raceway Park back in 1986 or whenever it was, you know, that I had put on, and I completely forgot about it, right? Because they all run together, you know. Pristine, perfect program from back then.
Awesome.
Really
cool. How did he get it?
Well, he put it in that book 25 years ago, and it stayed there until...
How long have you and Bill known each other?
Long, long time. And he was transferred to Hawaii, and he came to my shop. It was interesting because...
I hope so.
He got the shit job in the Air Force, right?
Right.
Go live with the Army guys and be the liaison for transportation, right? But he gets to go to Hawaii, and he had been reading in Road Racing World about Team Hawaii and all their racing. He's like, "Okay, well, at least I get to..." So, you know, this tall guy walks into my shop and goes, "Hi, I'm Bill Wickersham. Been reading about you. Here's my bike. you know, here's a list of stuff to do to it. It was a tricked out Honda Hawk. And by the way, I'm going to be gone for 2 weeks on deployment or whatever. I'll be back. Leaves. I'm like, where does this guy come from?
What just happened?
This is cool.
Yeah, he's best motorcycle instructor, well, best instructor I know. And then, of course, he was teaching for me in the school. Huh. Super, super good. His strong ability is to understand the student's issue, right? He has great empathy. So he you know, is able to figure out a way to say it in a different order of words to help you understand whatever it is you need to work on.
Got
right?
it.
Right? Like, I can say to you, look, dude, you need to turn your head and look farther through the corner. And then you hear blah, 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 right? And so Bill will come up with a different way to say the same thing. And then you'll go, oh, I need to turn my head and look through the corner. Boom. I'm like, that's what I said, man.
Yes, but they would see it, Ed, what they realized was that you were talking. And then it was just like, oh, God. Big Bird.
Big Bird is now working for HBO.
Is he?
Yeah, HBO just did a deal with... What are the Sesame Street company name called?
Yeah.
Right. Anyway,
yeah.
So HBO is going to be making, paying for producing the shows.
Cool.
And the deal is that all these new shows
right.
go on HBO first for some time period, but then they still go to PBS and all the other stuff. There'd just be a little delay. But
Got
the
it.
Result is there's way more money. They're going to be able to way more shows. And, of course, HBO has a ton of resources.
Right.
So they probably do more cool stuff. Elmo.
Elmo.
What do you? Elmo is the little red
right.
guy,
I know
and he always says Elmo. His
How
name's not Elmo.
Street do you watch it?
I remember when Elmo was brand new.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
that's my because of child issues with my sister. I am now familiar with far more children's programming than I'm comfortable with. Although the Furrington Hotel. I think it's a BBC production. Pretty cool.
What's anyway. The Teletubbies? They have all those rabbits on the hopping around in the lead-in thing.
Right.
It turns out that those are really big rabbits.
Uh-huh.
They got big rabbits to make the scale look different, right? It turns out those rabbits are even more amorous than regular rabbits, and it's very difficult to get the shots that they want. So anyway, you were about to say something.
Rabbit reproduction. Only and exclusively on Motor Deep Thinking, the Motorcycle Road Racing Podcast. What else is on the list?
That's
dude?
It, man. That's all I got.
Okay.
And we're pretty close to the 2 minute.
No
we're,
way. Are we
yeah,
really?
2 minutes.
No way. Well, no.
Okay,
2 minutes
two
comes
minutes
up at 20.
30 seconds.
Until then. I was thrilled to death to see what happened in the Moto2 race at Indianapolis. Alex Rins took his first win.
Yes.
Good karma. Good kid. Good head on his shoulders. I was a little worried.
They had to start on the damp track. They all went on slicks. They all had to be smart in the beginning.
Right.
It was a good race.
But he doesn't, he didn't set the world on fire in the first half of the season. I was wondering if Moto2 was his level of incompetence.
You know what else happened in Moto2? Marquez's brother got 10th.
Finally?
Hey, come on, half a season, don't be getting down.
I told you guys.
And you know what else?
Told you last year.
When they changed the last two corners at Indy, they did a good job.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, right? It was used to be super, super tight.
Right.
And it was stop and go, and there was a lot of bumping and banging.
Right.
And, you know, you could see some marks on the ground. Some people fell down there. But that corner now is just a good corner to get onto a straightaway. It doesn't become an issue of itself. So good job.
Okay.
As
excellent.
Good as the Moto 2 race was, the Moto 3 race was awesome, was it not? It
had Don't you just all love
the,
that?
It had all the elements, right? So everybody's out on reins,
right?
Because it's raining. Then it stops raining. And then the guys in the points lead have to stay with reins because
right.
they have to be conservative.
Right.
Then there's a couple other guys who are like, hey, we got nothing to lose, man. Let's put slicks on. One of them, the kid who won the race,
Aloy.
Went for the warm-up lap on slicks. They committed to the slicks early.
Mm-hmm.
The other guys went in from a warm-up lap and changed
right.
on the pit road. And their teams were ready and got them out at the, you know, as soon as the guys went by. And all those guys went up to the front. And then the points leaders team... the Leopard team,
right.
those guys, it looked like Chinese New Year when they came. They were totally not ready. 2 minutes something to change tires.
Really?
Anyway, the three guys who are all, you know, mid-pack guys and whatever, never been on a podium, they all made the right decision,
but
rode smart, and they all finished a podium was completely guys who had never been there before.
Wasn't the margin of victory like 40 seconds or 38 seconds?
Right, because that was the one guy
right.
who started from the grid position
that he was supposed to be on with slicks.
The second place guy was waiting at pit out, so
right.
that's where the big gap. The third place guy came right after that. Everybody else did a lap or two or whatever and then went in and they were no hope. It was genius.
You know what? That's just the coolest thing.
And to be clear, right, we like it because it shows the thinking. Not only the thinking on the part of the guys who gambled,
okay.
for it's thinking for the team and it's thinking for the rider, because we all know you're on slicks, the track is still damp, it's scary, right? And so you can easily scare yourself, take away your confidence, and then never go fast enough.
Right.
Right? So those guys did all of that. And then the guys in the points lead, they were smart enough to go, you know what? Those guys don't matter to me.
I don't need to win today. I need to beat this guy.
And, like, there was a lot of thinking going on at the same time.
And there was also the sheer, you know what, Ed? I'm a romantic. There's the sheer joy of watching somebody who's never going to win a GP race.
Well,
he's now a GP winner.
I love watching first-time wins. It's great.
Oh, that's so cool.
But you know what? The other issue here is that once you win your first one,
it
gives you that confidence. Now, I'm not saying these guys are going to be on the podium next weekend, but they are going to do better.
Exactly.
They're moving forward. That's the whole.
It's always
a moving target.
It's something that your manager can take out marketing.
Yep.
Hey, you know what? Even if this guy.
And when they all three of them did a perfect job on the podium.
Oh, okay.
Right. They didn't just turn into blubbering fools. You're right. They can get more money for it.
2 minute board. Ed, we want to talk about the Moto 3 podium at Indianapolis.
So
this
in
is
America,
classic.
We think we're the greatest country in the world, right?
Right.
And
we are. What's wrong with you, Tommy?
Exactly, right? America! So, three brand new guys on the podium for the first time. Two of them are less than 21 years old.
Right.
Drinking age in America is 21, apparently. I didn't know this.
Yeah.
It was 18 last time I was a kid.
Really?
Last
time you were a kid?
Yeah.
How often does this happen?
Until I was 18. So, they get the three guys on the podium, and only one of them can have a bottle of champagne. That's just... I can't even come up with a word for how pathetic that is, right? I mean, they're spraying the champagne, right? The hypocrites who passed this rule are drinking themselves stupid under a table every night, right? That's just dumb beyond belief. And then, promoter, right?
Right.
You know you're in a state or country that has idiots running things. Get sparkling cider, for crying out loud, so they can spray it.
Right.
But in the end, the kids won because the dude that had the champagne bottle sprayed everybody and then handed the bottle to the other guy who took a drink on a podium, even though it's not legal. Excellent.
I can't believe they didn't have bottles of milk. Or is that just for the Indy 500?
I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you can't spray milk, right? You can just do the mustache.
You can spray milk. Believe me, I got in a lot of trouble in school for that.
I just saw a commercial, a picture of a box of Wheaties.
Uh-huh.
And they have a picture on the box. It has a bowl of Wheaties and it has a banana, you know, and a spoon in the bowl and the cereal's in the bowl.
Right.
And the milk, chocolate milk. They finally started following my advice.
Wow.
Chocolate milk on your cereal, folks. I'm a genius. He's Michael Gugis.
He's Ed Sorbo.
Aloha.